This is VOA News via remote. I'm Laurel Bowman. French President Emmanuel Macron said on Thursday that all four European Union leaders present in Kyiv supported the idea of granting an immediate EU candidate status to Ukraine. Macron made the comments at a news conference after a meeting with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in Kyiv, alongside German Chancellor Olaf Scholz, Italian Prime Minister Mario Draghi, and Romanian President Klaus Iohannis. The Lithuanian parliament on Thursday called for the criminal prosecution of Russia's leadership for its invasion of Ukraine and what it said is the wide-scale forced deportation of Ukrainians to Russian territory. At least 1 million Ukrainians were deported to Russia and Russian-controlled territories, including 200,000 children, the parliament said, in a motion that was passed unanimously. The Dutch intelligence service said on Thursday it had uncovered a Russian military agent attempting to use a false identity to infiltrate the International Criminal Court, or ICC, which is investigating accusations of war crimes in Ukraine. The man reportedly created an elaborate cover story dating back years to try and enter the Netherlands as a Brazilian national for an internship at the Hague-based ICC. That's what the agency's head told Reuters. In Nigeria, Somalia, Ethiopia, Egypt, and Yemen are already feeling the effects of the Russian-Ukraine conflict on food prices, the Washington Post reports. Ukraine and Russia produce about a third of the wheat traded in global markets, the Post says, and about a quarter of the world's barley. The United Nations warns that the war in Ukraine could increase the number of people facing acute food insecurity by 47 million this year. This is VOA News. Police in northern India fired shots in the air on Thursday to push back stone-throwing crowds, and authorities shut off mobile internet in at least one district to forestall further chaos. This as protests widened against a new military recruitment system. Prime Minister Narendra Modi's government this week announced an overhaul of recruitment for India's 1.38 million strong armed forces, looking to bring down the average age of personnel and reduce pension expenditures. Myanmar's ruling military on Thursday defended a planned execution of two prominent democracy figures as lawful and required, defying international criticism for resuming capital punishment after a three-decade hiatus. The United Nations, France, the United States, and international human rights groups have urged the junta not to follow through with the execution of the activist and the lawmaker, who both lost appeals against terrorism convictions. The Vatican on Thursday issued the first detailed disclosure of the Pope's main fund, this in an apparent attempt to boost the confidence of the faithful and how their charitable contributions to the Pope are used. The Peter's Pence Fund, whose aim is to help the Pope run the Church, is made up of income from a collection taken up in Roman Catholic dioceses around the world once a year, also individual contributions and inheritances and bequests. Britain has no plans to leave the European Convention on Human Rights, but the Strasbourg Court, which enforces it, overstepped its powers in blocking the deportation of asylum seekers to Rwanda. That's what Deputy Prime Minister Dominic Raab said on Thursday. The government was thwarted in its attempt to send a handful of migrants on a charter plane more than 6,400 kilometers to Rwanda on Tuesday after the European Court of Human Rights stepped in to issue injunctions, which led to the flight being canceled. Sri Lanka's fuel stocks will last for about five more days, its power and energy minister said on Thursday, as the island nation awaits official confirmation from the Indian government for a new $500 million credit line for fuel. The country of 22 million people is caught in its worst financial crisis in seven decades after its foreign exchange reserve dwindled to record levels, with dollars running out to pay for essential imports, including food, medicine, and fuel. For more on this and all the stories we're covering, visit us at voanews.com. We also have an app that you can download. Just search for VOA News. Reporting via remote, I'm Laurel Bowman, VOA News. We'll be right back.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehias Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Amharas and Eritreans will resort to defending their own interests if the federal government decides to ignore their interests.
That was Desalegn Chaniye, a member of Ethiopia's parliament with the National Movement of Amhara Party, on the need for wide representation in possible peace talks. Details coming up. Also, vast majority of African youth see China as the most influential player on the continent. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. A record 89.3 million people have been driven from their homes by war, violence, persecution, and human rights abuse by the end of last year, up 8% from 2021, according to the UN Refugee Agency's annual Global Trends Report. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
UN High Commissioner for Refugees Filippo Grandi says the figures are made even worse when the number of people forced to flee by Russia's invasion of Ukraine is included.
And Ukraine has displaced anyway between 12 and 14 million people, depending on how you count them. So the figure has exceeded 100 million. That this is due to a rise in conflicts and crises.
Emergencies have caused the numbers to climb every year over the past decade. The UNHCR says Russia's Ukraine invasion has spurred the fastest and one of the largest forced displacement crises since World War II. While the world is focused on Ukraine, Grandi urges governments to pay attention to the many emergencies that have preceded Ukraine and continue to shatter the lives of millions of people.
We had Ethiopia at the end of 2020 and through 21, we had the Afghanistan situation in the summer of last year, Syria, for example, South Sudan, the question of Palestine refugees. These have been very long-standing crises that add to the numbers.
The UNHCR says refugee numbers rose to more than 27 million last year, while those displaced by conflict within their own countries increased to 53.2 million. Dispelling common perceptions, the UNHCR says more than 80% of refugees fled to poor and middle-income countries. The report finds five countries, Syria, Venezuela, Afghanistan, South Sudan, and Myanmar, account for more than two-thirds of the globally displaced. It says Turkey took in the most refugees, followed by Colombia, Uganda, Pakistan, and Germany. The United States is still the top refugee resettlement country in the world. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The vast majority of African youth see China as the most influential foreign player on the continent and say it is generally a positive force, according to a new survey by the Ichkowitsi Family Foundation, a Johannesburg-based think tank. Kate Barlett reports from Johannesburg.
If it's a battle for hearts, minds, and wallets, well, then according to young Africans, China is outperforming the U.S. these days. That's according to a survey of more than 4,500 Africans between 18 and 24 years old living in 15 countries across the continent. 76% of the people who responded say China is an influential and positive international actor. The top reasons for the positive perception: affordable Chinese products, China's investments in infrastructure development in Africa, and job opportunities. By contrast, the popularity of the United States has dropped 12% since the foundation published its last survey in 2020. Igor Chikovich, who heads the organization, told VOA what the research had shown.
In the first edition of the Pan-African Youth Survey, we asked young Africans which country they believed had the biggest influence on the continent. And at that point, it was without any doubt the United States. This year, 2 years later, post-COVID, the picture is completely different. 76% of young Africans believe that the most influential country in Africa at the moment is China.
Chikovich says it's mainly down to investment. The US is not one of the biggest investors, whereas China is.
Young Africans are telling us that they are seeing tangible, visible, and very impactful signs of the role that China has played in the development of Africa. Yet that there is significant criticism of the influence of China in Africa, it's very difficult for African governments not to value China, because China is providing capital, providing expertise, providing markets at a time when Europe and the United States are not.
Weniso, who gives only her first name, is a 23-year-old young African medical student having a coffee on a busy sidewalk in Johannesburg. She says China has been best at job creation and investment in Africa, but she has some concerns over human rights abuses in Xinjiang and prefers Western-style democracy.
However, socially, I'd probably put them last because of all of the social injustices happening against the Muslim community and we're a very liberal sort of generation. So I think the biggest pushes in terms of that would probably be once again the West, so the US, in terms of just their liberal nature of doing things.
Tandazani Nayati, in his 30s, sits in the winter sun by a fountain outside a mall. He says he recognizes that China has been a huge investor in Africa, but he doesn't have a preference between the US and China himself.
Which one am I particularly favored to? The one that doesn't come screw us. They're both looking to profit, right? I would lean towards the country that wants to profit, but on the most equitable terms.
The African Union Commission reports 40% of the world's youth are expected to reside in Africa in the next decade. The fact that China is helping create a middle class on the continent means it will also help create one of the biggest consumer populations in the world, Itchikovich says, adding the West should start paying more attention to the continent. Kate Bartlett for VOA News, Johannesburg.
France's military says French drone strikes killed nearly 40 Islamic extremists early this week near Niger border with Burkina Faso. The French military today called the strikes a new tactical success for France's counterterrorism efforts in Africa's Sahel region, named Operation Barkhane. Niger's government said the militants were killed after an attack earlier this week killed 8 security forces in southwestern Niger. Also, the French news agency AFP reported that suspected Islamic militants killed 6 Nigerian fishermen in Cameroon's far north region close to the Lake Chad hideouts of insurgents. AFP said a local official and a police officer confirmed the attack. Cameroon and the Central African Republic have agreed to demarcate several hundred kilometers of their shared border. The countries have had competing claims to villages and towns along the porous, undefined border. The two sides also vowed joint efforts to stop violence along the border, where Central African rebels have been hiding and launching raids for supplies. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Defense ministers and police chiefs from Cameroon and the Central African Republic agreed Wednesday to demarcate their shared border through a joint commission. The CAR's Minister of Territorial Administration, Decentralization and Local Development, Bruno Yapande, led his country's delegation to the three-day talks in Yaoundé. Yapande said both sides want to demarcate and develop the border to improve security and living conditions for civilians.
Nous avons déjà exploré plusieurs pistes. Il y a eu déjà des recommandations.
Yapande says the presidents of the two countries have promised that the demarcation of the border will begin within a month to make border towns and villages safe from violence. Yapande said the two countries also agreed to reinforce their joint military presence in border towns and villages. Cameroon shares a close to 900-kilometer, mostly porous border with the Central African Republic. CAR rebels use the bush around the border to hide from both sides' troops and to launch raids on nearby villages for supplies. The governor of Cameroon's East Region, Grégoire Vongo, attended the meeting.
Le maître de frontière entre le Cameroun et la RCA ont été.
He says a 1908 accord, supervised by German and French colonial masters, defines the Cameroon CAR border. Unfortunately, says Vongo, people, erosion and floods since have destroyed many boundary markers. He says Cameroon and the CAR neglected to maintain border markers as they were focused on fighting CAR rebels since the CAR gained independence from France in 1960. Mvongo said the CAR has not gone 10 years without political tensions boiling over into bloody conflicts. The two sides this month announced that 2,500 of 300,000 Central African refugees who fled conflict to Cameroon would return home by the end of the year. The refugees agreed to return home after Bangui promised peace had returned to their towns and villages. Mvongo noted there are disputes over territory along the border that need to be resolved. The CAR claims some border areas that are currently inside Cameroon, including a market in Garoua-Boulaye town and parts of border villages. Cameroon authorities say there have been several confrontations with Central African troops in disputed territories since 2016, though none have led to fighting. Jeanette Marcel Gochanga is a member of the CAR Border Commission.
Il faut effectivement que cette démarcation soit faite comme l'a souhaité.
Gochanga says if the border demarcation is immediate, as recommended by the African Union, it will put an end to tensions and rivalries that impede free movement of people and goods and slow economic growth in villages where the border is disputed. Neither country has said when the demarcation project will end, but agreed to respect the findings of the Joint Demarcation Commission. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Much of Tunisia slowed to a standstill today as the powerful labor union went on strike over government economic reform plans. The union's walkout follows government proposals for a wage freeze and subsidy cuts, steps designed to yield a badly needed IMF deal for a $4 billion loan to ease the finance crisis in the North African country. A Reuters report indicates the strike is a new challenge to President Kais Saied as opposition to his rule mounts and a financial crisis looms. The strike is supposed to intensify pressure on Saied, who has tightened his grip on power since July 2021 when he froze parliament and sacked the cabinet, moves that his opponents have called a coup against Tunisia's young democracy. Saied has said he is just trying to counter political dysfunction and corruption. The warring sides in Ethiopia appear closer to peace talks after Tigrayan rebels announced they were ready to attend Kenya-hosted negotiations. The statement came after Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed said the government would form a committee to negotiate with the Tigrayan side. Henry Wilkins speaks to the government, politicians and analysts about remaining challenges for peace talks in this report from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
Prime Minister Abiy's announcement to lawmakers that a committee would be set up to negotiate with the Tigrayan People's Liberation Front is a sign that peace talks aimed at ending Ethiopia's civil war could be imminent. Analysts and lawmakers, however, have said that in order for negotiations to be effective, actors other than the TPLF and national government must be at the table. According to Desalegn Chane, a member of parliament with the National Movement of Amhara Party, this should include proper representation for the Amhara region and Ethiopia's northern neighbour Eritrea, both of which have played active roles in the fighting.
A peace process that does not ensure proper representation of all parties in the conflict is destined to fail. Amharas and Eritreans will resort to defending their own interests if the federal government decides to ignore their interests. I think Abi should understand the legitimate concerns of the Amharas as well as the Eritreans and invite them into the negotiating table.
He added that the government has not given assurance of this kind so far. Salamawit Kassa is the state minister for the Federal Government Communications Service. She told VOA that the committee will take over the whole process of negotiations.
The government has also formed a national dialogue commission to bring a broad-based, inclusive public dialogue that encourages national consensus.
She went on to say Ethiopia.
They will also stand together to bring peace. The federal government has formed a committee to oversee the peace process in Tigray, and this effort ensures inclusivity of Ethiopians as a whole.
As for the TPLF, who will mediate the talks is vital, it seems. Its spokesperson said in a statement Tuesday that the leadership of the African Union Commission has yet to win back the rebel group's trust, and that the closeness of the AU's high representative to the Ethiopian Prime Minister has not gone unnoticed. On this basis, it said, we hold firm in the existing agreement among the parties to meet in Nairobi for negotiations hosted and facilitated by the President of Kenya. Analyst William Davison with the International Crisis Group, a Belgian-based research body, said other factors beyond inclusivity and mediation will have to be overcome.
There are a number of outstanding issues that are obstacles to peace. I think first in line is probably the need to restore federal services to Tigray, particularly banking, telecommunications and electricity. Then there is the classification of the TPLF as a terrorist organization. But most of all, there is the issue of Western Tigray.
Amhara has said it will not relinquish control of the disputed region after taking it from the TPLF during the war, while the TPLF has said it must be returned. Ethiopian analyst Kiram Tadase says the economic climate in the country caused by the conflict and other factors including drought and cost of living may help push both sides towards peace.
If those involved in the conflict are not active in productivity or have less role in economic activities, the aggregate effect still be zero-sum game.
In his speech to lawmakers, Abiy said development is being hindered by the conflict. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
Tanzania today started relocating Maasai pastoralists from the famed Ngorongoro Conservation Reserve, where they have lived over for a century. Officials say the growing Maasai population is a threat to wildlife habitat and the UNESCO World Heritage Site, and that the relocations are voluntary. Rights campaigners call them unlawful evictions. Arusha Regional Commissioner John Mongela said about 296 families registered for the move 600 kilometers south of the Handina district, where the government has earmarked 162,000 hectares or 400,000 acres of land for them. But the Maasai community remains sharply divided over the issue, with many reluctant to leave the only home they have ever known. About 100,000 live in the Ngorongoro Reserve. Tensions continue to rise between the Democratic Republic of Congo and Rwanda. The DRC High Defense Council, which advises the government on security issues, recommended cancelling all commercial and diplomatic agreements with Rwanda because of allegations that Kigali backs the M23 militants in the eastern DRC. Yesterday, some protesters in Goma attacked people they suspected of being Rwandan, along with Congolese members of the Hutu and Tutsi ethnic communities. The Rwandan government denies that it supports the M23, a mostly Tutsi group that has launched several deadly attacks in the eastern DRC. Earlier this week, it seized the DRC border town of Bunagana. Reporter Jafar Al-Katanti in Goma spoke with VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson about the latest developments.
There was a meeting in Kinshasa last night, what we call the Superior Council of Security, and they decided to inform the government to cancel all agreements signed between DRC and Rwanda, economical and also political. And as you know, later this year, the President Felix Tshisekedi and Paul Kagame signed many agreements, and some of them was economic. For example, he allowed that the gold of North Kivu, South Kivu, and Maniema must be treated in Rwanda, the processed in Rwanda and not in DRC. So now all of those agreements must be cancelled because Rwanda is accused to support M23, which is killing people in DRC.
Now, yesterday there were some big protests in Goma and other places in the DRC in which people are accusing the Rwandan government of being involved in backing the M23 militants. I understand those turned violent. What happened?
Yeah, yesterday there was a protest in Goma. Locals were protesting against the Rwandan government, which is accused to support the M23 killing people in DRC. And during that protest, some Rwandan citizens which stay in Goma or come in Goma doing their business was attacked by protesters. But police was helping them, protecting them, and some people was very angry, attacked also some Congolese citizens, which are Tutsi. Like you know, there is many Tutsi and Hutu people in Eastern Congo who are Congolese, but they speak Kinyarwanda. In the evening, the spokesperson of the North Kivu governor says, we are in conflict against Rwanda. There is a conflict between DRC and Rwanda, and we are not in conflict with all Rwandese or all people which speak Kinyarwanda.
That was Jafar Al-Khatanti in Goma speaking by phone with my colleague Kate Pound-Dawson. Ryanair has dropped a requirement for South African passengers to prove their nationality before traveling by completing a test in Afrikaans. The policy has drawn a backlash among South Africans. Afrikaans is spoken by just 12% of the 58 million people in the country and often is associated with apartheid and white minority rule. The South African government said last week that the low-cost carrier's decision to force UK-bound travelers holding the country's passport to take the test was a backward profiling system. The airlines called the accusation rubbish, but said the test has been dropped. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Barrow, and our engineer, Joe Gill, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.